College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got Trent Green down in the middle of the field.
We will rally around Kurt Warner, and we'll play good football.
First and 10 from the 27. Warner back to throw. Rainbows the far sideline. And it is caught by Isaac Bruce. Makes a move to the 30, 25, 20. And they won't catch him today. Touchdown, Rams!
Mike Jones made the tackle. And the Rams have won the Super Bowl.
25 years ago today, the St. Louis Rams won Super Bowl 34. It was a moment that those of us who were around for it will not forget forever, because it will probably be our only NFL championship ever, unless we get a team again. You never know. But we thought there's almost nobody better to talk to about this Super Bowl, what it meant for this city, than the Hall of Fame quarterback, Kurt Warner, who joins us on the guest line this morning. Kurt, it is good to talk to you. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Great to talk to you guys as well.
So happy anniversary to you. And again, 25 years since this happened, and we always do this thing where we look back and we go, oh my God, that was 20 years ago? That was 30 years ago? What? We're doing it today with this. Can't believe that happened 25 years ago.
No, it is amazing. You know, almost half my life ago. But still so many vivid memories of that time and that place and the special team that we had. So, I mean, it's always great to look back and celebrate and remember those things. But it is definitely hard to believe that it was 25 years ago.
Yeah, and it's such a big part of our identity here in St. Louis. Obviously, we all know what's happened in the past few years, but it's a personal part of our selfhood here. I know for me, Kurt, we were fortunate enough to go to every one of those games at the Dome. I was 15 years old, and I think things that you experience at that time in your life they loom larger than other experiences. And so with that being, as you mentioned, just 25 years, half your life almost, that moment when Trent Green, he went down, you're stepping in, kind of going back to the beginning of the season, not knowing what was ahead. Where were you in your headspace in that time?
Well, for me, obviously, you know, my journey and story is well documented. So for me, it was, you know, and again, you have, you know, dual sides to this thing, because obviously it's a friend of Trent and you never want to see anybody, you know, suffer an injury. And Trent, having had a bit of a journey too to get to that place and finally have his moment, it was devastating from that perspective. But then there's obviously the other side of it where I had been waiting and hoping and trying and you know, just hoping somebody would give me an opportunity at some point to show people what I was capable of. And that was my moment, or at least, you know, I thought this was going to be my moment. You know, I didn't know how long it was going to last. I knew I was going to have to go in and play well early, because, you know, there were a lot of questions about me, which I completely understand. You know, like, you know, at the time, you know, Dick, you know, made the, you know, the infamous statement, you know, we'll rally around Kurt Warner, we'll play good football. But, you know, there was a part of everybody in the organization, coaches and players alike, that are going, oh my goodness, who is this guy and what is he capable of? And, you know, can he handle leading this football team? And I understood all that because of my story. But for me, it was, I just wanted that chance. I wanted that opportunity. I fully believed in who I was and what I was capable of. Obviously, that situation was perfect because of great talent around me, but also the mindset of how Mike Martz wanted to play the game really fit how I played the game. So, you know, when we talk about a perfect storm, it kind of was a perfect storm for me. Everything played out perfectly in that moment for me to be able to step in and have success. And, you know, it was all of those things and all of those emotions coming to that moment. But then more importantly than that, it was pushing all those emotions out and going, but at the end of the day, it's just football. Like, this is what I do. This is what I've always done. Let's go play some football.
How often do you look back on all of it and think, I can't believe any of that happened?
I think when it's your life, you don't really look at it so much that way, saying, well, I can't believe it happened, because it did happen. And I was in the midst of all of it. But I do think we look back and there's a lot of moments where we're just kind of sitting around now and we're going to relive or rethink about, this entire journey and how, uncharacteristic it was, how different it was, how many moments we had where we wondered, if that would ever happen. So we understand how unlikely the journey was, but when you're in the midst of it, so much is just, you go day to day and you handle this day, looking forward to the next one and the next one. And I've been extremely blessed. I actually tweeted this morning, in reference to all of this and the 25th anniversary, that there was a long time in my journey where I didn't want my journey. I didn't want to be the guy sitting on the bench or working in a grocery store or playing arena football and all this stuff. I wanted to be drafted and get into the NFL and have a chance from a young, I wanted all of that stuff. But now that you look back on it, you sit back and go, man, I'm so glad that I've got a one-of-a-kind story, that nobody else will ever have this story. So you come to appreciate all of those moments now, and you appreciate all that you kind of went through or the different, turns in the road that you took, because they all shaped me as a person and as a player. No idea if I would have been as good had I come right out of college and got it. Who knows? I mean, you can't look back and worry about any of that stuff. So, there wasn't a lot of that while I was going through it. But now I think we definitely look back and we consider ourselves extremely blessed for the journey we got to take and the story that we got to tell. And, and I'm thankful. I mean, even to this day, I sit back quite often and just go, how incredible is this? That not only did I have, a great 12-year career and have some great successes and go to Super Bowls and all of those things, but I'm still, blessed to work in the business and have the opportunities that I have and cover the sport. And I, get to call the Super Bowl on radio every year. I'm so blessed in so many ways. And, to think back to where I was when I was wondering if an opportunity would ever come and I'd ever get this chance to fulfill my dream. And now this is, so far beyond what I even dreamed that, that I'm grateful for all of it.
We're all in awe of you and your career, but that greatest show on turf, I mean, obviously you, Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, these incredible guys. And were there ever moments on the field where you, as the star quarterback, were in awe of some of the catches? like Ricky Prohl, right, to catapult you guys to the Super Bowl. Were you ever like, man, I can't believe I get to throw to these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were some of those moments. But at the same time, I think I was around those guys so much that it was commonplace. I expected them to do what they did, and I expected us to do what we did. One thing that I don't think a lot of people, could kind of put in their mind, so I was playing arena football for 3 years before I end up playing in the NFL. And in arena football, we would score 70 points a game. And you were expected to score every time you touched the football. And so when I got to St. Louis, and it was funny because, I would have opposing teams come over and go like, oh my gosh, you guys are like a video game. It's like unbelievable. You're unstoppable. And I remember thinking, why are we punting twice during the game? What is wrong with us that we're punting two times? We need to figure this out. So my mindset was completely different. So when I got there, surrounded by great talent. But I think the expectation in my mind was you're supposed to score every time you touch the football. And, we did that a lot. So it was so much fun, but it was just kind of a continuation of kind of what I believed about football at that point in time in my career. It didn't seem to be odd to me that we were really good and that we were successful and that I played with that. Like, that wasn't an oddity as it was to so many other people. For me, it was commonplace. As you step right in and you have all these talented players and you have this scheme and you believe you're good. Like, this is what we're supposed to do. And so it wasn't as if we ever stepped back and go like, wow, look what we're doing. No, we expected that every time we stepped on the field.
Okay, Kurt Warner, try to pretend like you weren't part of this team. Just be as objective as possible. Is that still the best offense of all time?
I believe it is, you know, for a couple different reasons. And first, it starts with the talent that we had on that offense, that collection of offensive talent. I don't know if that's ever been matched. When you look at, if you took the individuals out of, you know, of that situation and just looked at who they were as players, I mean, you know, just all the Hall of Famers and all the incredible players that we had, and even some of the, you know, what you might call a role player. You guys mentioned Ricky Prohl. I mean, the year before we went to the Super Bowl in, you know, so in 98, he was the MVP of our team, you know, and here he is, you know, more of what we call a role player. Than it just speaks to the talent that we had. So I think it starts there. But I think the level of consistency that we had as an offense was second to none. To do what we did for 3 years, to do it so consistently, to do it at a time when, you know, there were a lot of games where, you know, our, you know, that starting group was out in the third quarter, which is so different than the way the game is played now. So numbers, you know, are so skewed now for a lot of different reasons, that to see the consistency in what we accomplished over 3 years, you know, it's just never anything like that has been done before. And then I think you put in the third factor is that the game was different back then. I mean, it was physical. You could grab guys, you could hold guys, you could hit guys over the middle of the field. And so there were so many other aspects that once you understand that, and then you saw how detailed that team was and how good we were with the little things and the nuances of the game, which I'm sure a lot of people don't appreciate, but something that I appreciate, that at that point in time, you had to, you know, I had to be on time with throws and guys had to trust me because if I was late on a throw across the middle, you know, they're getting hit at that time. And it's a different kind of thing. And so the appreciation for those aspects and kind of the beauty of the way that we played the game, I think is very rare. And you don't see much of that in this NFL, even though the numbers can be gaudy and impressive with a lot of these teams. What we did and how we kind of ushered in this era that you can throw to win, I think you stack all of those things up. And, yeah, I don't know if it will ever be matched, but I definitely believe that that was the greatest period of time for any offense. And, again, I say in the history of the league, I have no idea, you know, 20 years before me. I don't, you know, I can't go back that far. But from what I remember growing up in this game and then obviously everything that I've covered since, I believe it's the greatest offense that we've seen.
All right, last thing before we let you go. As you said, you're on the call of the Super Bowl for Westwood One. It's the Chiefs and Eagles. What do you think?
Man, I think it's going to be a great football game. And I think on paper, I continue to lean towards the Eagles. I think they have the better roster top to bottom. I guess more names top to bottom than the Chiefs have. And so there's so many things that, you know, make you lean in that direction. But you've got the ultimate, you know, X factors in I think Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, that every time you want to say, well, they're not as talented or they don't do this well enough, they just find ways. And so you have to believe this is going to be a great football game. It's going to come down to the end. And which team outlasts the other team? You know, when these guys played 2 years ago, it was back and forth. And the Eagles scored with a couple minutes to go to tie the thing up. And then, of course, Patrick has the ball last and drives them down. They kick a field goal and they win the game. And so I believe it's going to be very much like that again, even though I feel like the better roster is on the Eagles sideline. We've just never seen, you know, any group, you know, of guys and any quarterback quite as masterful in the moment. Well, I guess we could maybe say Tom Brady's been great in the moment, what made him so special. But nobody since then that we've seen that's so masterful in the moment as Patrick Mahomes. And so I have to believe that they're going to find a way to keep it close. And then we'll see how it plays out in the end.
Kurt, thank you for your time today. Again, happy anniversary to you. Enjoy the Super Bowl coming up in about a week and a half, and we'd love to talk again soon.
All right. Sounds great. Take care, guys.
That is the Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner, part of the greatest show on turf, the St. Louis Rams. That's right, the St. Louis Rams, with a Super Bowl victory in number 34. And we'll always have that. We don't have the team anymore, but we can always still celebrate it. 25 years ago today, they won the Super Bowl.
It's
nuts.
So much fun. It ruined me. It ruined me. You know how Kurt just said in arena football, you scored 70 points. He thought that was normal. I thought the greatest show on turf was normal. I was 15. This is football.
Imagine,
this is what football is.
You know, imagine thinking about that. They scored every 8 seconds. I'm looking at my team like they score every 8 years. It's Amy Marks Corps, Chris Ranji. Give us your memories of the St. Louis Rams on this 25th Super Bowl anniversary. On the Chris and Amy Show, 314-436-7900. Drop us a voice message from the Odyssey app. This is KMOX.
So we just put a Twitter poll up on at Chris Amy KMOX on Twitter.
You need to go follow it.
Go follow the account. Yep, at Chris Amy KMOX Twitter poll.
And then vote.
The question is, if the 1999 Rams played the 2022-24 Chiefs.
Yeah, so basically the current Chiefs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who would win that game?
Would the 99 Rams beat this current iteration of the Chiefs if they played? That is the question.
I think it's a tough call, actually. I love Kurt, Hall of Famer. Torrey Holt, Oz Akeem, Isaac Bruce.
Gosh, that team.
That the offense was better. It's just that the Chiefs have a better quarterback.
So,
and it's
a lot.
Like Patrick Mahomes.
Wait, what did you just say?
Huh?
What did you just say?
Patrick Mahomes is arguably the best quarterback of all time.
Wow, he didn't lead. And with that. Didn't lead with that in the last segment, did you, buddy?
Well, I wasn't going to do that. I bet you Kurt Warner would say the same thing.
Well, we should have asked him.
I did. By the way, I listened to Kurt on, he's on our sister station, The Score in Chicago, routinely, and he was talking about the marriage between a quarterback and the coach and how important it was, and how Kurt was with Green Bay for a little bit, and he just didn't get it.
Yeah.
He was just, I can't, this is not right for me. Ends up with the Rams.
So
it clicked for him. It's so important where you end up.
So here's the thing.
So for Mahomes, it's important where he ended up.
I had a friend from Boston, and we used to have heated arguments about who would win the 99 Rams or the 07 Patriots. And we would go after it because he was convinced the 07 Patriots were the best offense of all time. And they were really good, and some of the numbers, yeah, are flashier than the 99 Rams. I argued, though, that it's not offense against offense. It's team against team. And the 99 Rams had a better defense than the 07 Patriots. And, I mean, defense is ultimately what won Super Bowl 34 with the tackle. And so I've had this argument over and over again that I do think the 99 Rams would beat the 07 Patriots. What's interesting, the Chiefs' defense is pretty good, and you could argue it's better than the 07 Patriots defense. So would the current Chiefs beat the 99 Rams? I'm going with the Rams, but I'm also incredibly biased.
We asked you what your memories are of the Super Bowl in 1999. The victory was 25 years ago today. Travis is with us from Illinois. Hello, Travis.
Hey, Chris and Amy. How are you guys doing?
Good. What's
good.
Up?
So, Amy, you and I are about the same age. I was 16 with the 99 Rams, and I don't know about you, but it was my first recollection of any kind of championship sports in St. Louis. If you remember, the Blues were absolutely cursed with the Keenan era, losing Gretzky. They had just lost to Detroit 3 years in a row in the playoffs. And then I'm too young to remember the 85 and 87 Cardinals.
Right.
So as it's going on, it was just such an amazing feeling to have that in St. Louis. And not to mention just how could you not love that team because of how classy they were, not just their talent, but just the story and just all amazing people. It was just such a refreshing thing for the city at the time.
Oh, I agree. So much fun. Like you said, the Blues cursed. And it's funny because our cursed teams, our bad teams, still had their moments because the Blues, of course, had Brett Hull. We got Wayne Gretzky. Obviously, in the middle of the Keenan era, that didn't work out. But we got Gretzky, which was so much fun. The Cardinals were no good, but we had Mark McGwire and the Sammy Sosa race. So we had our moments, but that championship team was solely on the shoulders of the 99 Rams. And I cannot tell you, like, we would tailgate on Cole. Like, we would park, like, on the Cole Street and go into the Cole Street entrance. Like, I remember it because, as I said, that age, that teenage year, those teenage years, things loom forever in your life. Just huge because of your age and your life is smaller when you're 15, 16.
Of course.
So the championship is bigger. And I cannot tell you how spoiled I was. I knew it was special, but you're too young to really grasp that you'll never see this again.
And I understood. Oh, I was in so college fun. At the time it was happening. And, you know, as I've said, you know, I'm a Bears fan, but I was really rooting for this team at that time because it was so fun. I was so proud of the city. I was happy for the city. I was at a Super Bowl party in college, and our friend's dog peed all over the food on the table.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that Super Bowl.
That was the Super Bowl. Oh, really? Yeah, that was
the Super Bowl. Story. I didn't know it was the Rams.
Our friend's dog, Muller, walked up to the coffee table with all the food on it and lifted his leg and peed on it. That was my memory of the 99 championship Rams season. When we come back, nobody better to talk to in St. Louis than Bernie Miklas, who has his own Rams stories. So he'll be joining us next on this 25th anniversary on the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. The Bernie Miklas Report brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. It is time to talk to KMOX sports contributor expert Bernie Miklas, who is with us, who was around for the 1999 Rams team that, again, 25 years ago, won Super Bowl 34. Bernie, happy anniversary to you as well.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. It was a great, great season. It was really unbelievable. And it remained a thrilling season. It was like really start to finish, but then just the way it ended with just spine-tingling drama with Mike Jones making the tackle a yard away from the end zone on the final play. This coming about 2 minutes after Kurt Warner hit Isaac Bruce for a 73-yard touchdown pass to break his 16-16 tie. It was just an extraordinary experience covering it and watching it. I can only imagine, like on that Super Bowl Sunday, what it must have been like for everybody in St. Louis who loved the Rams watching that game together, huddled with family, friends, whatever. I know that in the press box, Jim Thomas and I were pretty much going bananas other than, you know, you had to sort of keep it to yourself. But it was just an unbelievable game.
Yeah, no cheering in the press box, Bernie.
Yeah.
No, but Jim and I always had a reputation for talking real loud in the press box. So I'm sure.
Not you.
Yeah, not me, right? You guys must have to turn down the volume every time I'm on. So I do talk loud. I apologize.
We love it.
We love it. And you're not as bad as Kevin Wheeler.
Oh,
but,
dude.
No, it was so much fun. Bernie, I've said this 100 times, but it just spoiled me for what football was. And in the middle of it, even though it does feel like this euphoric high the entire season into the playoffs and the Super Bowl, you still can't comprehend quite how extraordinary it is and how it will never happen again. Like, that's in the middle of it. There's nothing. There's even with the Chiefs going for their three-peat in the Super Bowl, it's different than what the greatest show on turf was.
Yeah, the Chiefs never did something like this. And I'm not slapping the Chiefs, but I'm just saying, I don't think anybody in the history of NFL did this. You know, the context is required. You know, the first season they were in St. Louis, they won seven games. Then the next season, it was six games. Then the next season, it was five games. Then the season before the greatest show year, they won four games. They were taking this escalator down, down, down. Four consecutive losing seasons, four wins before in the season before 1999. How do you go from that? Well, we know how Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, and so many others. But how do you go from a 4-12 season to going 13-3 in the regular season and then sweeping the playoffs and winning a Super Bowl? I mean, that's just highly unlikely. I was doing some back reading real quick. ESPN, the magazine. Remember that? I like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Before the 99 season, they did their power rankings, and ESPN, the magazine, rated the 1999 Rams the worst team in the National Football League going into the season.
Awesome.
I mean, it just underlines the drama and how wildly improbable this was.
So at what point of the season, you know, you're covering it, the Trent Green injury, Kurt comes in, you know, has some pretty quick success. But was there a point where you thought, okay, this is actually legitimate? This isn't smoke and mirrors.
Well, you know, the first game, Warner came out against a great Baltimore Ravens defense and passed for 3 touchdowns, his first NFL start. And I remember, you know, Rams coaches were like, wow, this guy's actually pretty good. And then there was a game in Cincinnati early in the season where Oz Akeem returned a punt for a touchdown. Warner went nuts throwing touchdowns everywhere. And I remember, you know, Kurt Warner almost snapping at reporters from out of market, not St. Louis guys and women, because people were just sort of asking questions like, well, isn't this a cute little story? You guys aren't too bad and all this stuff. And, you know, Warner by then already was basically in this mindset. It's just like, you know, we've got a great team here, okay? Quit treating us like little underdogs. So and I just thought, well, they're starting to feel it. Ironically enough, the game that told me the Rams were for real was a game that they lost. It was at Tennessee, because the storyline going into that game is like, well, this fancy Rams offense and, you know, all these finesse players and all this and all that. But they're not tough. They're not tough. Wait till they go to Tennessee, and they're going to take on a tough, tough team, and we'll see what they're all about. Now, even though the Rams lost the game, they got off to a terrible start. They came on at the end so strong, like, you know, metaphorically speaking, you know, punching the Titans in the mouth, that Tennessee barely held on to win that game. And I said, I remember saying, talking about it, it says, you know, this actually validated the Rams as being a hell of a football team, even though they lost, because everyone thought they would crumble. Oh, someone's going to hit them hard, and oh, the greatest show stuff's going to fall apart. And they were like, nope. And even though they lost the game, they proved the point that day.
Speaking of the greatest show falling apart, I remember watching the Rams play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to battle for a spot in the Super Bowl, which they won 11-6. We brought up Ricky Pearl's catch. That was kind of stunning in and of itself to be in a championship game, and the greatest show on turf wasn't greatest showing seemingly, and yet they still won that game.
Well, that's exactly right. And see, that reaffirmed what a lot of us who covered the team and watched the team thought, that the Rams were plenty tough. You don't be confused by the beautiful offense. The Rams at their core were a really tough team. I mean, their defense was fourth in the league in fewest points allowed. And they didn't really give up a lot of yards. But the Tampa Bay game was amazing. It was in effect so scary. Mm-hmm. I mean, they came very close, mm-hmm. very, very close to getting knocked off. That Tampa Bay team always gave the Mike Martz Rams a lot of trouble, because you know why? Because they were really, really, really fast. They could match the Rams team the speed on the field. But when the Rams survived that game, it was such a close call. And they really did get beat up in the game, and they did their part of beating Tampa Bay up. Well, it was an incredibly physical game. You had the feeling, it's like, there's just no way they'll lose this Super Bowl. And it got a little hairy, obviously, in the second half. The Rams missed a lot of chances in the first half. Mm-hmm. They had 5 red zone opportunities and only got 3 field goals out of them. So they left the door open for the Titans, and the Titans ran the ball like crazy in the second half. But again, the mental and physical toughness, the Rams made the play to save the game. Yeah. So they proved every test that was put in front of them.
And I'll always appreciate the Rams for winning that Super Bowl and upsetting Tom Hanks's wife in Castaway, because she was awful, and she lived through the Super Bowl, and she's like, we lost by 1 yard. And I'm like, you know what? You deserve it, because you were cheating on your husband.
That is,
it's true.
That's, that, I feel like that is an underappreciated angle.
It's absolutely true. She was definitely cheating on him with the dentist. So,
oh my gosh, that I just can't stop thinking about this team. Oh, how fun!
I know
it was.
It was so just fun. Looking at the score, like throughout the season, Bernie. At that time in 1999, it was just not very common for a team to be scoring 38, 42, 41, 43. Right. I mean, they're constantly in the 40s, in the upper 30s. The offenses just didn't operate like that at that time.
No. You know, here's a stat for you, because you know I am, of course, stat boy. In their first four seasons in St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
The Rams scored 30 or more points 12 times in four seasons, right? The 1999 Rams in the regular season scored 30 or more points 12 times. So they did that. They scored 30 plus points 12 times in one season, which matched what the previous four Rams teams did over four seasons. I mean, wow. I mean, and then, you know, it continued from there. I mean, they led the league in points over the next 2 years too. And over the 3 years, they averaged about 32.6 points per game. That had never been done before in the NFL at that time. To average over 30 points, over a three-season period. So they were the top offense in NFL history at that time.
Yeah, and I feel like that 99 Rams team really did recalibrate offenses and how you viewed an offense on an NFL team. And just like you mentioned, Bernie, coming from just the absolute depths of hell, I mean, I was a Rich Brooks, Tony Banks Rams fan. I was 12, so I can't explain why Todd Kinchin was my favorite player. And I wrote him a letter and said he's my favorite, but he needs to hold on to the ball. He sent me an autographed card back, which is great. I can't believe I did that. But just, you know, how much, what that team meant to St. Louis, because we lost the St. Louis Cardinals. Then you get a Rams team, and you're so excited, and all the PSL drama. And then they're terrible.
What's a PSL?
Yeah, I know. That first season.
It was.
That first season was a lot of fun. And those games at Busch Stadium before the Dome opened, the Rams played, I think, their first three games, might have been two or three games at Busch Stadium, the previous Busch Stadium. Those games, you know, that outdoor setting, it was just a fantastic atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I really love that. But no. You know, and then we haven't even just mentioned, you know, the fairy tale of Kurt Warner. I mean, the night that Trent Green got his knee blown out on a cheap shot by Rodney Harrison in the third preseason game, and Trent Green was really, really, really good. He came in there and took charge of that team. He became the team leader. He changed the culture. And it looks like the Rams were going to have something going with Marshall Faulk, Trent Green, Isaac Bruce. They drafted Torrey Holt. And then all of a sudden, you're thinking, hey, you know, they have a chance to be pretty good. They have a chance to be good, you know. And all of a sudden, he gets destroyed, his season destroyed on a cheap shot by Rodney Harrison. And I remember calling Rams executives that night. I had, you know, good terms with them and everything. I talked to Jay Zigman. I talked to John Shaw. And they just could not be consoled. I mean, they were just numb. They were so down. They were so depressed. They really could hardly speak. They were so just down and out. And so you go from that to the drama later that night and the drama of Sunday morning, because Dick Vermeil wanted to see if they could talk Jeff Hostetler out of retirement. And Mike Martz sort of intervened. And I'm not saying this to make Dick sound bad, because actually that was a good idea to see if Hostetler would come out of retirement. But Dick Vermeil went to Mike Martz and he says, well, what do you think about Kurt? What do you think about him? And he said, Dick, to be honest with you, we're going to be fine with him. He said, I've been tougher on him than any player I've ever coached. I'm in his face all the time. I berate him. I just grind him. And nothing fazes this guy. Like, he loves pressure. He loves being confronted and told he's not good enough. He said, we're going to be fine with him. He can make all the – we're going to be fine with him. And that's when Dick Vermeil came out later that day and, you know, was crying at the news conference, you know. I always forget the quote. I mess it up. But, you know, Kurt Warner's our quarterback, and we're going to win with Kurt Warner.
Rally behind Kurt, yeah.
Rally behind him. There, thank you. And You know, Mike Martz was right. He was right. And I remember Jim Thomas and I talking to Kurt Warner that night. It was no other media was around. It was a Sunday night, and it was the first chance to really interview him at length. And I thought he was remarkably confident without being cocky and remarkably poised. And I wrote a column the next day, Post-Dispatch, that said, hey, rally around the Barnstormer. This guy might be better than we assume. And I didn't predict what was going to happen. Hmm. But I just said, hey, don't. Like act like this is some joke. I mean, this guy's actually got something going.
Yeah, we just talked to him, what, about 40 minutes ago, I guess, a half hour. And he said that something along the lines of there will never be another story like this, which I mean, when is it going to happen that right. A team with high hopes going in loses their quarterback before the season and a backup that nobody knows carries them all the way through, then eventually becomes a Hall of Famer on top of it. The odds of that happening are almost zero. So he's probably right. I don't know that will ever happen again.
I don't think it will. And you know, another interesting angle to all this, and if you hear it now, you'll say, well, what were they doing? The Rams must have been crazy. No, they realized that they were in no danger of losing Kurt Warner. But the Cleveland Browns, they got a team from the NFL. In 1999, they were an expansion team. And they had an expansion draft, which was after the 1995 season. Excuse me, the 1998 season. And the Rams did not protect Kurt Warner. Like, the Cleveland Browns could have drafted him. But no one knew who Warner was except for the Rams. And they knew, well, there's just no way they're going to draft this guy. There's some veteran quarterbacks on that list, and they're going to migrate that way. So they took a gamble, but can you imagine if Kurt Warner had been drafted by the Browns in the expansion draft? I don't think there would have been any growling in St. Louis because we didn't know about him. He was kind of an intriguing guy with his background.
Way to know.
Right. And there's just no way to know. But that what a calculated risk and a successful risk that was that Charlie Army and Dick Vermeil took.
All right, Bernie, as we celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Rams Super Bowl for St. Louis.
Do you like to golf, Ronge?
Not really.
Okay, well, good. You can't win these tickets anyway.
Well, I can. You know what?
No, you can't.
I should win these tickets and out of spite, sit on them. Not let anybody have them.
Like literally sit on them?
Literally for the entire weekend, I'm sitting on tickets to the St. Louis Golf Expo.
Okay, well, listen, he can't. In case everyone right now, I know you're probably freaking out, ready to call the cops. He's not going to enter the contest. We are giving
I'm going to burn him.
Giving away Golf
burn
Expo
it.
Tickets to the St. Louis Golf Expo at the St. Charles Convention Center this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We are not giving them away right now. You got to keep listening.
Got to be listening.
This is why we tell you to be very careful.
That's right, dude. Got to be listening for your chance to win. And if you miss out today,
yes,
A, your fault. B, you'll have another chance tomorrow.
But by that time, your odds of winning are very slim.
Well, yeah, they're going to decrease by 50% if you don't win today. Your chances will.
Most of you are going to lose this contest.
Yeah. Most of you listening are going to lose every contest we ever
That's
do.
That's the problem with contests, is it creates more losers than winners.
I hope, and James O'Sullivan, who's answering the phone, I hope the person who wins today says, and I expect them to say to James,
yeah.
And if they don't say to James this very thing, we're going to take the tickets away.
No, we can't.
You have to say, oh my God, I can't believe I won. I've never won anything in my whole life. They have to say exactly that. Word for word.
I think they're just going to say, wow, I didn't think I would win because the odds are so slim.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I won. I've never won anything in my whole life. If you don't say that to James, you don't get the tickets.
Folks, he doesn't have the authority. This is not under his purview to create contest rules on the fly.
That's true. I can't. But for extra credit, you can do that.
Yes. Hey, also, tomorrow, the St. Louis University Billikens are taking on Dayton.
That's right.
And I don't know what Dayton is. I don't know what Dayton's
Flyers.
The Dayton Flyers.
Yeah.
Very good. And it is the Billikens Blizzard, which is their whiteout game. And I think really to keep an eye on things, you know, after the kerfuffle in the stands, they called us, said, Chris, Amy, we want you to be there. We want you to be on campus on Friday. We just think you guys bring a calming presence. and that people respect you.
Yep.
There's an air of authority wherever you go.
Yep.
People don't misbehave around you, too.
That's correct.
So we need you to be at the Billiken's Grill on Friday morning.
The Bill Grill.
The Bill Grill or the Grilliken from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. broadcasting live.
And the last time we did this last year,
yeah,
there was actually a blizzard that rolled in.
It snowed.
Do you remember that?
I had no idea.
Nobody said anything about snow.
We get the weather every 17 seconds here, and I'm like, why is it snowing?
You said, I think it was you or me. Somebody looked out the window and said, it's snowing out there.
I think that was me.
And then we left, and there was it was hard getting home.
Multiple inches of snow.
Yeah.
It accumulated.
But that is not going to happen today or tomorrow. It won't happen.
No.
Because it's going to be like 50 degrees tomorrow.
I think it's going to be exactly like today, a little dreary.
But it'll be fine, and you'll have a good time at the Billiken Grill. We're going to be there at 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We're there until 1 o'clock, and we would like for you to join us. And then go to the old ball game later on, 6 o'clock that game. It is the Billikens versus the Dayton Flyers. And, of course, mm-hmm, we will have the broadcast right here on KMOX.
Quickly, too. Yeah. Get on Twitter/X, follow Chris Amy KMOX, at Chris Amy KMOX. We have a Twitter poll. If the 99 Rams played the current Chiefs, who would win? A lot of people are voting. This is gaining some traction. People want to vote on this. We want you to vote on this.
Yeah, you should vote.
Chris Amy KMOX.
Would the 99 Rams beat the 22-24 Chiefs?
Yes.
I say yes.
I say yes.
I think so. And that's not homerism. I'm just saying, I think legitimately they would have.
Not sure if it's homerism or not. I feel like I'm pretty good at being objective, almost to the point of being cynical.
Yeah.
And I think the 99 Rams would win.
That's probably true. Hey, we've been covering the story of the plane crash, the collision between the Black Hawk helicopter and the passenger plane in Washington, D.C. And Josh Hawley had tweeted this morning for Missourians. If you had a family member or mm-hmm another loved one aboard Flight 5342, there is a hotline if you need help. The hotline has all the resources you might need, is this number, 202-731-1858. 202-731-1858. So we will continue to cover that story. The show will continue when we come back. Hey, something cool is coming to St. Louis, and we love cool stuff, don't we, Amy?
We love it.
A new concept of a bar is coming to the city. It's called Flight Club, and we will have the Vice President of Marketing for Flight Club next in studio on KMOX.